You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures with Paul Booth. I'm your host. Happy to be here today. Actually, very excited. Today, we're going to be interviewing writer, producer, director. I'm very sure he edits also his films, and I know he co-stars in this film. He was not in his last film, Friends, Effing Friends, Effing Friends. Today, we're going to be discussing The Narcissist with Quincy Rose. And Quincy was on for that, and then he came on for a couple of other episodes. So it's really cool to have him back today, especially since one episode, I think, was 2 or 3 years ago. And he said he would come back for this film. So that's really cool. I'm always beyond the moon when a guest says they'll come back, and they do. The Narcissist we reviewed last week. You can check that out at www.talkingpicturesla.com. It was 2 episodes ago. Today we're getting ready to tear into episode 346, which is wild. I remember when we had done 3 episodes and was just like, oh my gosh, we've done 3. So this is really exciting. And of course, this film was shot in New York, so it's beautiful. It has some wonderful eye candy, especially if you've never been there. I've had the good fortune to go twice. The Narcissist, you can check out Amazon Prime, Video on Demand, and let's see, I think we have... Aloha, Quincy, are you there?
Mr. Paul, how's it going?
How's it going? How are you? Thanks for your time.
Of course, thanks for having me on, man. Can you hear me good?
Oh, yeah, no problem, no problem.
Excellent.
You can hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly, perfect.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, you know these. I think it was. It's an age-old joke. I think Seinfeld started making it on the show. We can put a man on the moon, but we can't get dinner order right at a restaurant or something like that.
That's so right. That's right.
These phones do amaze me. We can. I always joke that one day they are going to launch a space shuttle from an iPhone. But anyway, I digress. So I'd let the audience know that we're here today to talk about The Narcissist. And I usually like to, there's so many different synopses all over the internet, but I figure why not hear from the director what the film's about?
Oh, interesting. Basically, there's like multiple things happening, but the easiest way to tell it is that there's a film going on and a film within the film. And what I mean is that one of the characters, the character that I play, Oliver, is a filmmaker talking to a pal of his about a film he's trying to hopefully make. And then as he's talking about that, we actually see it instead of just hearing him talk about it. And so the bulk of the film that the audience will watch is the film within the film. And that particular story is about a couple who live in Brooklyn, and, you know, it's they've been together for several years, about 5 years, and they've been having some issues. And so they're not sure if they want to stay together or not, but also because their lease is up for renewal, and neither one of them would be able to afford the apartment on his or her own, they have to make a decision. Do we sign the lease and stay for another year, which is essentially the same thing as saying, let's commit to one another for another year, or do we call it quits? And so where the film picks up is about they took a couple weeks apart to decide these things, you know, to really give it their own thoughts and kind of discern what they should do. And so Oliver remained in their apartment in Brooklyn, and his girlfriend Cassie went up to her sister's house on the Upper West Side. And then where the film picks up is you see Cassie hanging out with her best friend Letty and Oliver hanging out with his best friend Max, and they kind of separately but with their best friends meander New York City until they come to some sort of head. And that's a pretty long way to explain it, but I think it gives it a better kind of explanation than the very simple breakdown we did for for just, you know, general text that you're talking about.
Which can be found.
Yeah, because it gets, you know, if there's like a meta quality to it, and there's a lot of like me personally, Quincy, dealing with my personal influences and the critiques put upon me by the critical audience, as well as my own personal critique of my work. And then the character in the film, Oliver, that I play is dealing with these same issues, but then because he's making a movie about his own life, the character's life, and then we see that, he gets to play around with similarities to me, although the bulk of the story is not about me at all. It gave an ability to address certain personal beliefs and you know, just kind of thoughts I have and feelings I have about you know, my work and other people's views of my work, and then also just get to really make it and have fun with my influences and such. So and specifically one very large influence in particular. So and that's noticeable throughout the film, because it's unless you have no sense of film history and you don't know certain films, then you might not get that. And you don't need to know any film history to enjoy this film. You could just watch it and it would just be a film, and you'll enjoy the dialogue and hopefully, and the visuals of New York City and et cetera. But if you have an added kind of, there's a little inside joke for people who are aware of specifically of Woody Allen's earlier work, but just in general, some other filmmakers too. But yeah, like we use certain streets throughout New York and that were kind of made iconic or famous or known through his older films like Annie Hall or Manhattan, stuff like that. So yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say there was like a structure within a structure within part about your work, part about your life, but a character, because we won't really go into it, but between you and I, it's I was thinking about this last night. I was like, you know, you never really get to interview someone who about John Coltrane, who was like John Coltrane's drummer, and then wonder like how John Coltrane was influenced by them versus the whole world thinks that the drummer influenced John Coltrane. So I was just thinking, like, this is really interesting, because ultimately you're taking from an influence that basically the world thinks is just that person, but then also that connection that you have to the influence. So the fact that you just mentioned that, I really liked that, because I kind of, that was running through my brain. So based on that, you just described, like, I mean, obviously that cliche saying, it all starts with the writing, which we know it does. How did you possibly, like, I'm just thinking structure, the way you just answered that question, like how, what was kind of like the length of process that it took to figure out, the length of time to figure out that kind of structure? I mean, that literally sounds insane to try to pull off.
I think the structure actually came to me rather organically as I was just playing around with what could a story be. And, for me, the actual story came about from a photograph I had taken of a friend of mine when I was saying goodbye to her across the tracks of a certain train where she was headed uptown and I was headed downtown. And it was just a, you know, completely innocuous situation. There was nothing particularly amazing about this moment. I just snapped a picture of a friend waving goodbye from across the tracks. And it just, I liked the framing and the poles in between, you know, that side and the side I was on, and the, you know, the trains whizzing by and all that. And it was, we were just, you know, having a final goodbye. And then I was looking at that photo later, and it occurred to me, like, I was like, oh, I really like this picture. It kind of evokes like a lot of emotions and kind of like a little mini story in my head of like, who is that person? Now in real life, I know who that person is. She's my friend. We just had dinner and said goodbye to one another. But in the fictionalized version, looking at the photo, I was like, what's the story behind this person. Like, they're on opposite sides of the track. So he's on one side, she's on the other. What are they, just find each other? Are they saying goodbye to each other? What is it? And so I just kind of had that image in my head, and I thought it would be a good place to either start or finish a film. And so I had that originally, and then I just started like jotting down little like ideas around that. But then ultimately the film itself, I just always wanted to make a film in entirely shot in New York. And I wanted to make, I had already made two prior films, and I wanted to make my third film at the time. And I wanted to do it very, with a minimal amount of help, and be able to really just run around and do whatever we wanted, and get actors that I knew who I thought were great, but that I also knew who would be on board for this kind of experience. And so first and foremost, once I knew that those were the things I wanted to achieve with this film, then I had to start attacking the idea of, well, how would this film be made, before I even had a script, actually, to be honest. And it was really thinking about how could I do a film for like, you know, very little money, next to no money, to where, you know, if everything just failed, if it was just terrible, I could scrap it and not care, not, you know, totally be careless about it, but be able to be bold with the decisions. And so I just kind of thought, you know, what would be interesting is if each scene was a singular take, and stuff like that. So then I decided that these two characters were going through some sort of separation, or potentially some sort of determination as to whether or not they would separate. And then I started thinking, well, what if they hadn't separated, but they might separate, and there's a reason why they might not separate, and what would that reason be? And then I started writing the script. But I decided that instead of having them deal with it with one another, it would be fun to have each character deal with their own best friend, which would essentially separate the film into two female characters and two male characters. So I could play around with each perspective wholeheartedly and separately, and each group doesn't have to worry about offending the other group because they're totally on their own. So, and then I decided, because, you know, Zach, who plays Max, Zach Tejan, was my pal in Miles to Go. And he's so funny, saying all the worst things I could make a character say, like, you know, like borderline misogynistic, or not interested in relationships, or just really outlandish stuff, but within a realm of, you know, some reality to it, not to him, but to real, you know, to people that exist. And it's not that he's the worst person, the character, but he's also maybe somebody you're apologizing for from time to time around your girlfriend or your friends. And then I thought, well, what would be fun is if my characters opposite my girl, the Oliver's girlfriend, Cassie, was more like Oliver, kind of a little bit straighter and narrower. And then her friend was completely outlandish, very similar to Oliver's best friend, Max, that Letty, who was played by Augie Duke, would be outlandish. And so then I just took the time to write, you know, each sequence of scenes and how they kind of relate to one another a little bit, or how one might lead to the other's discussion. But they're not having the discussion together, so it has to be a little looser than that, but just kind of covering similar subjects and really having fun with just going for it, and then kind of reeling it in before we shot. Like, it was on the page, it was far crazier before I got to the final draft. But yeah, so it was, the structure wasn't as laid down as like I might write another script if I'm just telling a very fluid story from beginning to end. Or even if I'm jumping around in times, you know, I can still write from beginning to end, and just I'll jump with the script as it jumps. But this was actually me sitting down and writing scenes, essentially, because I just thought it's just about writing these scenes. And if these scenes are funny or interesting or relatable, and hopefully all three, then, you know, we have something. So that's how the script came about. And it just really made sense to me. for it to go back and forth, essentially, and just kind of spend this day with these four characters in two groups of two.
Well, that was one of the things I really liked. There was multiple things. And again, for everyone, you guys can check out our review on our website. It's two or three episodes ago. And I think I might've told you this in email, but one of the things for everyone out there, again, it's a story. Like my friend always says, with what's going on in the world right now, with some things are said, he's like, it's a movie. Like some of the, like you said, some of the things that your, the friend says, it's like, you don't need to flip out. You don't need to get nuts. It's like, it's a fictional character. Okay, New York's a real city, but that's about as real as it can get about some of the stuff that he says. So I was really intrigued because I felt like it was just so real. And of course, we won't get into this discussion of PC and all that, but in the way it applies to your film, I liked being able to just kind of sit back. I feel like now we enjoy that with, like, if we watch Dave Chappelle or an old Chris Rock video, to where like we have to seek out something to where we can just sit back, explore what people really talk about, how they talk, without thinking that it's going to cause a protest or a report on CNN. And so I just really loved the way you chose to separate and to have that friend, like, as you mentioned, you might apologize for sometimes. I didn't pick up that he was a guy from Miles to Go, but I remember that character, and you know, we all have them. So yeah. What that kind of leads into was, for the separation thing, I mean, you nailed that so well. So, I mean, is that just kind of like observation, an amalgam of knowing people? I don't ever really like to ask people about what they've been through, but like, you were just so on it with that. So like, how did you, what was kind of your recipe in cooking up just how, you know, the way that the people separating and what they would be thinking about at that exact moment was just like so dead on. I mean, like, how did you kind of have like a, that doesn't really feel like that would be going on at this point? I mean, was there anything like that for you as a director?
Well, actually a lot of the film's dialogues, are distinctly not addressing the exact problem. Like if this was a real life situation and I were in it, that walk would be like every single second would be like, I don't know what to do. Should I do it? Do I stay? Well, what do you stay? Like, let's figure this out. Like it would be very solution oriented and not avoiding the issue. But because the film is called The Narcissists, and it's kind of commenting on how people are these days and general, and you know, we're all kind of not really thinking about all the perfect, you know, like the we're not necessarily spending all of our time on the right thing, and specifically these characters are not. So it was more a balance of, let's not lose sight of the fact that they are going through this potential devastation for them, not like a, you know, it's just an existential crisis, but it's for them, it's theoretically everything in this moment anyway. And, but at the same time, let's not only talk about, you know, I can't just have an hour and 20 minute film about two people just going on and on about a breakup, you know, because that just wouldn't be interesting. And the nice thing about a film that takes place over many days, like in the film, you know, when the film story is, even if it was a week or, but months, is you can jump throughout any conversation, because at any point in someone's life, you know, within a year, let's say, or 6 months, you're going to talk about something happy, you're going to talk about something sad. Even if you're losing your parent that week, you might still talk about something, you know, other than you're losing your parent, right? So, So it was just a matter of coming up with, like, what are they talking about? Why are they talking about it? Who are these characters? And then really, for me personally, I was just kind of entertaining myself as a writer and just coming up with things that I thought were like interesting conversations that were topical, relatable, and made sense to these characters. And then I just kind of go for it. And then it's like, you know, I had to think to myself, well, I haven't really talked about the breakup at all, you know, at all. Like maybe I should bring that into here. And so that's kind of more in the polishing that I was able to bring those subjects into it. But as far as like, where did I draw from? Well, I mean, I'm old enough now in my 40s to, you know, I've been married, I've been divorced, I've been through numerous relationships. And while I'm in a wonderful relationship with an amazing person, who, by the way, also has a really great film out right now that everybody should see. Her name's Angelica Zolo, and her film Trauma is a Time Machine. I can't not plug. I have to plug, not just because she's my girlfriend, but it's really a beautiful and difficult subject matter. Now, hers is like a real serious drama about a young woman who got raped in her relationship by her boyfriend and is dealing with the after effects of that trauma. It's called Trauma is a Time Machine. Look it up. It's great. But, you know, so I'm personally in a really great relationship with an awesome woman and an understanding person, and we have great communication and we're not going through a breakup, but I've been through many breakups, and I've been through the edge of a breakup, and I've been up to the edge of a breakup when you don't break up. And I've had the conversations of, you know, all of these things. And I've talked to many friends and over the years of who have been through this or that. So, and I have spoken to people who are like, wow, if I break up, I have to move out and I can't afford another apartment right now. Where would I live? And I love that apartment. And sometimes people stay together just out of the apartment. And especially in a city like New York, where it's no joke, the rent here. And it's not only the rent, it's how you go about getting an apartment. So while I hope that like the rest of the world could just watch it and go like, oh, I get it. Like they can't afford their apartment. And like, on their own. So there really is the idea of like, well, you might have to stay with this person for another year. And God forbid you say, yeah, let's stay together and we'll work on it. It's going to be great. And then a month into that year, you're just at each other's throats. Then like, who's sleeping on the couch and how horrible are the fights you're having? And are you up late all night? Or are you just like, you know what, we can cut it and this is fine. And we'll just go about our business. And, you know, if one person starts dating somebody else, God, you know, then it's war, you know, it's a whole nightmare. But like to add it to New York, I mean, getting an apartment in New York, I mean, you could go on Craigslist and get lucky with a room or this or that. But if you go out and try to rent an apartment, they want to see that you made 40 times the amount of the rent. And they want to see that you've been doing that for 3 years consistently. They want to know that you have, you know, some sort of savings and some sort of, and then you need letters from past landlords, and they have to be positive, and you need references. I mean, this is, you're like, I'm just getting a little box in your tiny shit building and I'm going to pay you an exorbitant amount. Like, isn't it enough that I have the money and I'm paying? No, it's not enough. We need to know you had it for three. And it's crazy. So there's guarantors and there's this. And so if you live in New York or you're familiar with a scene of renting like that, then it really ups the ante for that situation. But, yeah, a lot of the specifics are imagined to these characters, but of course it's always based on, you know, things I've been through or things I've heard other people going through or, you know, something like that. But I just said, drawing on the fact that it is really hard to get your own apartment, that, well, that would, you know, that would cause you to have a little panic, you know, and maybe put up with something.
What you said about the I could completely draw a map of how Turner Classic Movies and a couch is what got me to like 6 months of living with a woman. It was just so I was really liking that part of the film because I was liking how you weren't going into any drama, you weren't going into. And then I got the text from this guy, or my favorite one is, and I don't care because a lot of people that know me will know exactly who I'm talking about, but when you've been broken up from someone for 8 years and they've been with someone for like 7 years and 8 months, and you're kind of like, did that
doing the math
before? Yeah, you're kind of, exactly right. Exactly. If your girlfriend misses your period and you're like, huh, were we Okay, that was my birthday. So anyways, that's what I was trying to was enjoying about it, was that it wasn't causing any frustration. Like, I know someone who's, unless they're like right now in the middle of a breakup, they might not get the structure of the comedy of it, of course. For the directing aspect, I'm looking at, you know, the things we talked about the takes, the long takes. What was there a specific challenge in the terms of, it's so funny that, like, before, did you have any kind of maybe some nerves about, okay, we got to do a 3-minute take and this part and this part are just so funny, but we cannot laugh, but it's just possibly natural. Like, how did you get over that challenge?
Well, you know what? That actually didn't come up on this. There was no, really, everybody, I was very clear with everybody up front that this was going to be shot as close as I could, you know, could shoot something to a, like the similarity to a play, in the sense that each scene was going to be fully, you know, had to be fully memorized, and there was not going to be any cutting, and you got to get through the scene. So honestly, I don't think there was any, I don't think anybody had any breakout, like, I can't say that line because I keep laughing, or that person saying that. I've had that in past situations where we're doing a lot of coverage, and like just on the one close up, like, you can't stop laughing, and wow, we're going to be here for an hour because he can't stop laughing or she can't stop laughing. And, but for this, that's out of my control. That's whether or not the actors break or not. But you know what? Everybody was very on point, and everybody was very much in their character and in their dialogue. And they were very, professional with that. And, just everyone just knocked it out of the park. The bigger issue was going to be, I knew the whole time, was, is somebody going to look in the camera who's not with our film? Cause you know, we're just shooting on city streets. So and if I'm doing a 5-minute take, is anybody going to look in the camera at minute 3, you know, and screw up the whole take? That kind of thing. Or from a technical aspect, dealing with my sound man, Rob Ellenberg, who's just wonderful, or my DP, Jason Krangle, also wonderful, but being able to position Rob sound in the right place, because we're all mic'd, there's no boom or anything, so there's no following the characters because it's one giant take and it's wide, so you'll see everything. So if he's starting too far down the block, then Rob had to be hidden somewhere in the middle so that he could catch both ends of extreme distance. If it was closer, he could just stand behind the camera or near the camera. And those kind of technicalities were more, I had to be more cautionary about. But again, they're out of my control. So it's really just about, you know, aiming for something and then hoping that it comes off. And I would say, I think two different times, people on the streets ruined our takes. One time specifically, a kid who seemed to not notice the camera and was standing right next to it, then discovered it in the middle of like a 5-minute take and near the end. And as the light turned green and they walked off, they like turned and looked in and made like a goofy face to the camera. And it was like, great, we got to redo that, but that's fine. And then one, we had like a little bit of an incident with a passerby who was just very righteous and didn't want to wait 3 seconds for us to finish our little scene, or like everybody else had been doing, you know, the few other people who came upon us just walked around us the 3 feet. And this person wanted us to know this is her block and she's not waiting. And she walked right through the middle of the thing and right into the camera, like didn't hit the camera, but like went right between the scene and pushed her way through and then said some stuff and got nasty with us for being where we were. And, it was uncalled for, but, you know, we got into a little argument there, but other than that, it was really just about the actors nailing their scenes, because, you know, when you have a 5-minute scene with no break, if you really drop the ball, it's obvious. But what I didn't want to do is just take away imperfection, because in a 5 minute scene, there might be a time where if you were in reality talking with your friend for 5 minutes, you might forget what you're thinking or what you're trying to say, or you might like not hear one another and have to repeat something or not pick up on a cue, a sound cue. And obviously we wouldn't call it a cue in real life, but you know, when your friend stops talking and you know to answer that question, sometimes you don't hear it and your friend has to say, what do you think? Hello, you know? And so if that happened, I just told the actors, never stop. Let me stop it. I'll stop it if I want to stop it. Otherwise, just go. Don't worry about someone standing in front of you. Don't worry about a truck blocking you from where you think the camera is. All of that plays. The whole point of this was to be a meditation on New York City, of certain people that habitate the city. And, you know, just, I wanted people to have a twofold experience, or maybe even threefold, but the main two were enjoying and relating to and feeling good about the dialogue that was happening and the actors who were saying such dialogue, but also just kind of getting lost in the shots of New York, of like, wow, that's a giant, really beautiful street. And look at that. There's a car and those people are texting and there's, oh, wait a minute, there's dialogue going on. What are they saying? You know, like, I would hope somebody would watch the film several times, even just to catch the city. It really acted as a time capsule for that period of time. And, you know, people are walking around texting. Nobody's looking at the camera. People couldn't care less, really, it seemed. And, you know, from the directing standpoint, that was all highly designed. But again, it's all, you know, it's up in the air until you capture it. And we just got really lucky with the weather and, you know, the people we were filming around and where we filmed and, et cetera. And so, although it was really cold a couple of the days, but another couple of days it was warmer, which then became its own issue because they're all supposed to be happening on one day. And the day we shot the women, it was freezing and they were supposed to be wearing what they were wearing, but then the men were supposed to be in warmer stuff. But then you see people walking around in shorts. So it's like, what's going on here? And that just happened to be a swing in the temperature, but you know, there's always, I don't think people really care about that. You know, but I did have somebody say to me, was it very different temperatures when you shot downtown as uptown? Yeah, and I said, actually it was. And they noticed that, but, yeah, so it was really just designed to accommodate a very quick shooting schedule, so that it would minimize cost of actors having to remain available and away from their other acting jobs and such. So, because all of that costs money. And then, you know, I literally just shot it with a camera person and my DP who owns his camera and lenses and then my sound guy, Rob, who owns his sound card. And then I had one other friend, my buddy, Jason Calicchia, who's a filmmaker, you know, just for fun. And he does other things in his life professionally. But so it was just, you know, it was just a really tight knit little group walking around like a band of, you know, crazies and just setting up and going for it. And it was just a lot of fun, really.
Well, I liked that. I, of course, as you know, but for people that don't, if you check out the review, I that was one of my favorite things that came across, because the only short I've ever done was just like, oh, you're my best friend. You're my film school buddy. You're my best female friend. You're my girlfriend. So basically, even if I'm, you know, if there is a problem, we could solve it in a minute. And just so I really like how that came across of just going out there and, you know, you have your script, you have your project, and you have your people that you can rely on. And it was making me think, like, I wonder how that would affect other films. Like if, you know, what, I know it's like it's a podcast for another time, but just that whole idea of like everyone being there to make a good movie and not being there to argue about, well, Quincy's trailer is bigger than mine. And Quincy's making 1 point more royalties than I am. And I need to be at the top of the poster as opposed to just, we have this great project. And since we're all going to get up at 4 a.m. and be up till 8 p.m, let's do something great. You know, like,
yeah.
Where did that,
well, in the case of us,
you know, like,
Yeah, and we didn't have to worry because we had no trailers and no points and nothing.
Right,
so
right,
it was exactly.
Yeah.
And but it is true, you know, on bigger, and look, the goal is not to keep making these tiny, you know, these tiny budget films. The goal is to make bigger films and,
right,
you know, make a living doing it all and all that such, which is the path I'm on. And but at the same time, there's different mentalities making those kind of films. And like, you know, when you come to perform on someone's film and it's a day or two and you get a smaller trailer, you know why you're getting a smaller trailer. It's a day or two. And if you're a big name and you got brought in, then, you know, you're going to get a bigger trailer and et cetera, et cetera. But there are people who are more concerned about the art than they are the personal gain. And they're all there for that purpose. And there's a number of examples that could be listed. And then there's also people who won't participate in those films because they need to make a decent living, or what they consider to be decent. And they don't want to take the pay cut or the point loss or whatever it is that they would typically get,
right,
on another production. But they might do it based on the material or the director or some actor that's the lead that they want to play with. And, you know, there's any number of reasons. So hopefully when you're putting together your team, you are also picking people who want to be there for whatever reason, whether they're the PA or the grip or the caterer, or if they're the lead or a guest, you know, a co-lead or a day player or the DP. You want people who not only believe in the project, but also are there for the right reasons. Nothing's worse than having someone who's just there to get paid and, or just get an extra clip for their reel if they're the actor. And also you can't just hire friends because they're friends. They have to be qualified at what they're doing. And I would say, especially for the acting side, which is the most visible side, it's nice to hire actors who are your friends. And in this case, I got very lucky because all these friends are professional actors who are really talented and great people and fun to work with. And I love them first and foremost. And, but they trusted me wholeheartedly, I've been in situations where you hire people that, you know, because you kind of write it for them because they're your friend or whatever it is. And then, you know, in the end you start to think, it's not that they didn't do a really good job, but you think, gosh, did I sell myself short by not, you know, at least seeing who else might be out there to play that part? Cause it could have been so totally different. Or, you know, there's just many things that could have gone wrong that way. But, yeah, you gotta be in it for the right reason. I mean, the thing on this film was, it was done very efficiently. It was done more efficiently than I thought it would be. I planned for it to be a certain way. I told everybody was ready for a 12-hour day at the most. Now we were shooting daytime, same day, the whole film takes place in one day kind of movie. So you really are limited to the daylight, you know, so can't be suddenly nighttime if it's the same day and then it's daytime again. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I knew that if we knocked out 2 days for each set of two, we could get the most of the script, and then one extra day for the other little pickups and different things. And then a couple of days that were like half days with just me and my cinematographer running around town to get all the beautiful shots of New York. I knew we could do that, but what I didn't realize is that I was prepared to have, prepared to have like 8 to 10 hour days. But we would get there early every day and show up and chat, and we didn't rush or go crazy. Nobody, it was very low key, very chill, happy to see each other. Let's get some food. Again, no caterer, no honey wagon, no, you know, holding area. It was just, everybody was on board for, look, you need to use the restroom. We're going to pause. We'll wait 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever you need. There's got to be a, you know, a restaurant nearby, or are you thirsty? I mean, I had a suitcase with like some snacks and waters, and whatever anybody needed was gotten. Like, if anybody needed anything, I made sure everybody was taken care of wholeheartedly. But, you know, it was more like, all right, should we cut for lunch, guys? All right, let's take lunch. What do we want to eat today? And because there was no overhead, we could actually have a little bit more enjoyable of a lunch, a little bit longer at a little bit nicer of a place, and et cetera. And then go back to the last scene that we're going to shoot for the, you know, the day. And believe it or not, like each day was like 6 hours. Like it wasn't even eight. I don't think we ever went 8 hours. The only day we went a total of 8 hours working was when we shot multiple things in one day, and we started early and we ended late, but we didn't shoot all day. We took a massive break, like a 4 hour break in the middle. So, it was really just hanging out and figuring out the next, you know, part of this and waiting for someone's schedule to line up with the rest of us. And it was no big deal, but it was really such a pleasure. And the reason I made this film, I'm probably jumping over any questions you might have, but the reason I really made this film was to kind of get a little bit of a taste out of my mouth for some problems that came up on the film before the making of it and the experience of that. And, while overall, I think I learned a lot of lessons, so it was a very positive thing overall, there were some things that just didn't jive right with me. And, I wanted to get that out of my system. And I also wanted to just really play around with some people who were on board to just see this vision through. And, I wanted to shoot something just totally in New York with New York type characters and really just, you know, kind of, make love to the city visually and just, you know, just really have a great time doing that. And this was just the best experience I could have hoped for. And it was also the closest I think I've come so far from getting what I had on the page to what I wanted on the screen. And that's, as any filmmaker can attest to, that is the most difficult part, because, you know, you're sitting at home writing and visualizing and you see it and it's perfect on the page in your mind. And then you get to the editing room and it's like, well, what is all this? Where's that? What, I thought we shot this thing. We didn't get that. What's this angle? Oh, that's terrible. The lighting's like that. What happened? I thought I said, I like, that's the scene I said I like best. No, this is all, you know, and all that. So, and with smaller budget films, you don't have time to reshoot. So it's all about solution and problem solving in the editing room. And, you know, as you often hear, that's where the film is really written, the final draft. And, that's where it all comes together. And, this was just an absolute pleasure. It was, because of the single take scenes, it was a delight to edit, because it really just came down to choosing what scene I wanted, where I wanted to come in, which take, you know, and where I wanted to exit and, what came next, you know? And so it was really just fun. And, I just hope other people appreciate it. Who, if you're a technical person or a filmmaker, I hope you appreciate those additional kind of elements. But if you're not, you don't have to think about any of that. You shouldn't know that it took a day or a week or 10 years to make all that. It matters. And it, you know, it didn't take 10 years at all, but it, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
Right. Right.
It should just be an enjoyable thing, and you'll like it or you don't like it, or it makes you think, or it makes you laugh, or you relate, or, you know, you have some sort of reaction to it. It was really a magical experience, I must say.
No, I think for sure. I let, you know, to let the audience know, it does definitely work. If you're not, I mean, you know, we've talked before, or I'm sure you know about me. It's so hard to turn off. Am I watching it as a podcast host? Has my love for film history has a filmmaker, or am I watching it as someone who just wants to watch a movie? And yeah, when you get into that, like, you know, oh, that's the Annie Hall shot, but wait a minute. Film viewers aren't going to recognize that, or, you know, the longer takes. Oh, that's how some 70s films used to do it. But I'm not supposed to know about Robert Altman right now. So yeah, so it definitely does work. And you know, kudos for you to that, because it was, you know, ambitious. Not like, as I said in the review, not in the way of like, oh, there's no way he could do that. But yeah, we really appreciate you coming by today, Quincy. Well, Colleen, I like to say coming by, so I sound cool. But
well, I'd love to come by one day, you know, in the future when I could be in studio.
Oh yeah, well, you know,
it's a little hard.
That's our goal. I can't tell you how many guests tell me, I wouldn't have time. I can't come to your studio. I can't do this. I can't do that. And I'm like, do you have a phone?
Yes, you know? Exactly. Well, I'm in New York, as you know, too, so it's a little bit of a commute to come to your studio. Perhaps eventually. And I'm just so grateful that you exist, Paul, and you're a wonderful dude and a really fair-minded, artist-minded critic, I think, and who loves film, and it's very clear, and we need more podcasts like yours out there, especially the independent filmmakers, because it's very difficult getting the word out, and and we just need people who aren't there to just take apart everything and pick apart things, but really there to think about it in a more positive way, and really just kind of appreciate the efforts and the material for what it is, and just, you know, really uplift it and support it, you know? So we thank you.
No, all of us from the narcissist. I appreciate that, Quincy.
Yeah.
All that from you, self-centered. No, I'm just kidding. Like I said in the review, I was just like, I remember when you told me that title and I was just like, what is going to come out of Quincy that's narcissistic? Like, I have to hear about this. So with that, I want to say that you can cherish your title that you have on the wall of films that I waited to see. So you KO'd Miss Rainey Kerwin. So
I love Rainey. She's wonderful.
Yeah, of course. We all love Rainey. So, but I had to tell her, you know, you had the record with the wedding invitation, and you know, now you're out of there. Quincy's the champ. So. And I'll wait however long it takes. You know me, so.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to see The Narcissist, they can go to thenarcissistmovie.com and find all the links, but it's on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, Microsoft, and some other things. You can see it on YouTube. And if you're worldwide, if you're anywhere in the world where you can't get it, because it is worldwide in English, so if you can't, if you're in like Australia and you can't watch it on iTunes or something, you can watch it on Vimeo. That's a worldwide thing, but in like the UK and Canada and the US, it's on iTunes and Amazon and many other things. So yeah, I just hope people check it out.
You know what? Thank you, Quincy, because you just, we got into talking there, and that was what I was supposed to bring up. So, thank you.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you for that lesson. Don't enjoy the guests too much. all right, cool. Well, thank you so much. You have a great day, Quincy. And of course, the deal, all the stuff, we'll get this off to you once it's up. And
thank
and
you so much, Paul.
You
aloha.
And all your crew.
Yes, sir.
All right, aloha. Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.